The Doors? Or Jim Morrison? He's a drunken buffoon, posing as a poet.
I like the Doors.
Give me the Guess Who. Come on, they got the courage to be drunken buffoons, which makes them poetic. Give me some White Light, White Heat. Iggy Pop! Amen! I just put this on. This isn't on your playlist either.
I just think it's a little bit early for that.
Not for me.
It's Byline. I'm Gabe Bullard, and that was Philip Seymour Hoffman as Lester Bangs, the godfather of rock criticism. And I'm here now with WFPL arts reporter Aaron Keene and another purveyor of fine music writing, Jeffrey Lee Puckett from the Courier-Journal. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Gabe. Thanks, Aaron. It's a pleasure.
And congratulations are in order for you, Mr. Puckett. You have been at the CJ since 1990, and this year you will receive the Governor's Award in the Arts in the Media category.
I've been doing music since 1990. My first year at the CJ was actually 85.
Oh.
When I did youth sports.
Youth sports?
I did do youth sports, yes.
T-ball and such.
Yeah, right.
Pee-wee
into
football.
It was a transition into rock and roll for sure.
Well, you've actually been a music critic since. Well, I have here a copy of the Seneca High School Sentinel from 1978. This is a record review by Jeff Puckett, The Babies, First Class Music. This is The Babies' second album, Broken Heart, which you say firmly establishes them as one of the best bands in the country. Do you stand behind that?
I completely stand behind that. I don't know how anyone could argue with that.
I loved reading this because in between all of the sort of, you know, high school critical writing, there are still some hints of Jeffrey Lee Puckett's passion for music as we've come to know him. But I have to say, a pounding beat and urgent vocals make Give Me Your Love one of the album's best cuts. Lightly seasoned, with some nice keyboard and guitar work, this song could hold its own against any Bad Company tune. Still a useful barometer?
I used that barometer in a review this morning,
oh,
as a matter of fact. I did.
Excellent.
The yardstick of Bad Company. Can never go out of style.
Well, so you've been doing this for quite a while, and
yes.
Especially since 1990 when you took over the music gig at the Courier. How has the face of music journalism changed? I mean, the industry has changed a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's sweeping changes. I mean, from the record labels, major labels controlling everything to almost completely falling apart to the rise of downloadable, stealable music to the internet, to blogs, which has been huge.
Well, so how does that affect your kind of daily, day-to-day work?
Well, I mean, there are more, you're expected to be in more media. You're expected to do, you know, it's not just print anymore, obviously. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change anything about how I approach writing at all. I mean, it's the same on a blog as it is, you know, in the paper. But there is some pressure. You know, somehow these bloggers with no credentials have become so important that it puts pressure on print journalists to be more with it. And I'll do some air quotes there. So that's the part that's been frustrating for me, is I see a lot of writers on the internet who have no business doing what they're doing, but it still has an effect on everyone, because you just have to keep up. You have to learn about Skrillex, for God's sake. You know?
Well, how do you maintain those credentials? How do you flaunt those credentials to make it clear that, you know, your review is something that has that extra degree of thought to
get
people into it?
I think you should make it obvious with the writing. I mean, that's where it begins and ends. It should never be a question for anyone. I mean, if you should write. I think people online sometimes, they just don't put as much thought into things. It's just, you know, you'll see post. This was posted at 3:48 a.m. And you just know they're hammered and they're just going to write whatever they want to write. And I can't do that. You know, I have everything that is going to be read by someone has to be as good as I can make it. And I think eventually that develops just a body of work that people can count on. So that's what I go for.
Has it also sped up your timeline? I mean, bloggers can bloggers will review an album 3 months before it's officially released,
right?
Just
yeah.
because they have it in their hands.
Yeah.
Does that then open the door for you to be able to review it if you have there even before it drops, or do you still stay fairly faithful to that kind of traditional media PR release date kind of schedule?
Yeah, I think it's important to stay traditional for the artist's sake, because if you write about something that can only be stolen at that point, then if you're wild about the record, you know, theoretically, the artist is going to lose even more sales if someone says, oh, I think I'll buy that. Mm. So I prefer to write about it the week it's released, or maybe the week after,
okay,
so that people can buy it, you know, legally.
So you're not as concerned about being first as you are about kind of respecting the process?
No. You know, for a long time, reviews at the Courier, they would sometimes run 3 weeks after release. And I kind of liked that because it gave you a chance to sort of soak it up. You know, because some records, you don't, the first couple of times you listen to them, they just don't, for whatever reason, connect with you. But I definitely understand that it's better to get it within the first 5 to 8 days, I think, is important. I think that's still soon enough.
Well, we were talking about how in Almost Famous, our fake Lester Bangs, Philip Seymour Hoffman, telling fake Cameron Crowe that to be careful when writing about musicians. You know, he's like, they're going to make you want to feel like you're their friend, but you're not their friend. does that happen to you? Do you have those kind of those boundary issues when you're writing about musicians that you also happen to know on a personal level?
It is a worry at times. Because we all live in Louisville here. We know what this town is like. My neighborhood has probably a dozen musicians in it, you know. And I have been friends for years with some of the people who I write about regularly. And to this day, I'm uncomfortable about reviewing my Morning Jacket concerts. Mm. Because I have to really make myself take a step back and not enjoy something that I know is maybe a little bit of an inside joke, some little aside by Jim or whatever. I have to just step back and say, all right, I got to be really firm about this. And if he's not singing too well, I have to mention that his voice sounds kind of off or whatever. I've never felt that it was a huge problem, though. The only time it's ever a really big problem is when someone I like puts out an album that's not very good.
Yeah.
usually then I will conveniently get very, very busy, and I won't have time to comment on that particular release.
Do you think there's an understanding, you know, you mentioned if you're going to say that Jim James' singing is a little bit off, an understanding that if he reads that, he'll understand that it's not some sort of personal thing, that it is, you know, you being the objective reviewer?
Well, the best musicians, I think, they want me to be honest. And that's been mentioned to me in conversation a few times. They're like, I know you're not going to blow smoke, and we appreciate that. So that is kind of frees me up a little bit to know that the next time I have a barbecue, it's not going to get ugly.
Well, you mentioned having to kind of stay on top of the game a lot to know about things like Skrillex, even if dubstep is really just far outside of your interest and perhaps your readerships as well.
Right.
So with the internet and everyone's a critic, does that make you have to? Does that dictate somewhat your coverage as far as like one role the critic has historically played has been of gatekeeper, of saying I am not going to cover that because that's part of the criticism. Mm-hmm. Like that's not, you know, I'm not going to give that my attention. But do you find yourself having to and you write for a newspaper too, which has a general interest readership,
right?
So you have to write about things that you might not normally care that much about, least as much about as the baby's second record.
Yeah. that can be tough / annoying to deal with stuff that I have zero interest in. But also it's part of the learning process, which never ends in any kind of writing, but especially I think with music writing, because you just have to know what's going on. So if I'm forced to spend an afternoon going through Skrillex's catalog on Spotify, then at least I can definitely say, this is not good. You know, I don't appreciate what this guy's doing, but it gives me context, which is just all important. You can see, I mean, and then you can even hear elements. You're like, oh, well, there's a little bit of Donna Summer in there. That's kind of cool. But overall, I just will never listen to this again.
Well, we've had conversations before about which bands and which acts out there have the most faithful defenders in the public.
Right.
Has any of that changed? Are Toby Keith fans still the most passionate about defending their having their boys back?
They're the most physical, let's say. Country music fans in general are the most vocal. Okay. I don't know if they're more passionate, but they're definitely the most vocal. And classic rock fans.
Mm.
Modern, I mean, I don't know if I've ever had hate mail from an indie rock guy.
Do they just reblog you and write their own snarky commentary?
That's probably true, yeah. which I avoid. But I've never had one, accost me with a white belt at Kroger or anything like that. But yeah, classic rock fans are because a lot of them are kind of, and this is not a, I'm not, this is not being snarky. A lot of them are locked into that era.
Yeah.
They just never had no reason to go on and listen to Pavement or REM or anything, from say 1980 onward.
Mm-hmm.
So that is their music. And if you say something bad about that period or their favorite band, God forbid, then they're going to be really upset.
Ah.
One thing, and Aaron touched on this a little bit, the great thing and not so great thing about the advent of the internet in the news industry or in media is that it sort of made everyone a competitor
right.
That, we're competing with places in other states elsewhere for writing, for getting stories out and all of that. And so at the same time that you're writing still for the Courier-Journal audience, for the people who are reading it in print and on the website, you're also, your pieces are available to the folks who might be out reading Pitchfork or
right.
who would subscribe to Rolling Stone. So how has that changed your approach to what you cover to how you cover it?
It hasn't really changed it that much. I like to think that I keep up pretty well with what's going on. Not obviously not 100% because it's just because of other changes in the media. You don't have as much time as you once did. For example, today, I had a huge story about the Maltese Falcon, which has zero to do with music, but had to be done. I think the good part is it keeps you on your toes. The bad part, like I mentioned before, is the feeling that you have to be kept on your toes, or is there going to be some kind of consequences? I like having a readership that is now everywhere. I mean, I get emails from people in Wisconsin who said, "Hey, I saw what you wrote about Barry Manilow." I had one last week. "I saw what you wrote about Barry Manilow. I just wanted to say, right on, man. All right, buddy." So that's kind of neat. It's just, I think it's, search engines are the, what do you get when you get the alert?
The Google alert.
The Google
yeah.
alert.
Yeah, your ears are burning.
It's really, really definitely changed things.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jeffrey Lee Puckett from the Courier-Journal. Congratulations on the award as well.
Thank you, sir.
All right. And WFPL Arts reporter Aaron Keene.